He would have made sure there was cream spinach for dessert. Albert Clown arrived at 6 o'clock sharp.
I'm not late, am I? He asked. I was working and I lost track of time. I'm sorry if I'm late.
You're not late, my mother said. You're just in time. We all knew who was late. Joe. The pot roast and green beans and mashed potatoes were set on the table, and Joe's chair was empty. My father sliced up the roast and took the first piece. Grandma plopped a glob of potatoes onto her plate and passed right. My mother looked at her watch. No Morelli. Mary Alice made horse sounds with her tongue and galloped her fingers around her water glass.
Gravy,
my father said. Everyone jumped to attention and passed him the gravy. I had a plate heaped with meat and potatoes smothered in gravy. I had a buttered roll, 4 green beans, and a beer. I'd taken the food, but I hadn't yet dug in. I was having an inner dialogue with my stupid self. Eat it, the stupid self was saying. You need it to keep up your strength. And suppose you get run over by a truck tomorrow and die. What then? You'll have dieted for nothing. Eat and enjoy. My mother was watching. You're not that fat, she said. I always thought you were too thin. Clown picked his head up and looked around.
Who's fat? Am I fat? I know I'm a little roly-poly. I've always been like that.
You're perfect, Snuggy-Uggums, Valerie said.
Grandma knocked back her glass of wine and poured another. A car door slammed shut at the curb, and everyone sat straight and still in their seat. A moment later, the front door opened, and Morelli walked in.
Sorry I'm late, he said to my mother. I was stuck at work.
He moved next to me, dropped a friendly kiss on the top of my head, and took his seat. There was a collective sigh of relief. My family feared Morelli was my last shot at marriage, especially now that I was fat. What's new? I asked Morelli.
Nothing's new.
I made a show of looking at my watch.
Don't push it, Morelli said softly, smiling for the family. Are you still driving the truck? I didn't see it out front.
It's in the garage.
Are you really going after Ward?
It's my job. Our eyes locked for a moment, and I felt the handcuff clamp around my left wrist. You've got to be kidding, I said, holding my wrist up for inspection, the remaining bracelet dangling loose.
Private joke, Morelli said to the rest of the table.
Then he clicked the other half of the cuffs onto his right wrist.
Kinky, Grandma said.
I can't eat like this, I told Morelli.
You eat with your right hand, and I cuff the left.
I can't cut my meat, and besides, I have to go to the bathroom. Morelli gave his head a single shake.
That is so lame, he said.
I do, I said. It's the beer.
Okay, Morelli said. I'll go with you.
Everyone sucked in some air. A piece of pot roast fell out of my father's mouth, and my mother's fork slipped from her fingers and clattered onto her plate. We weren't the sort of family who went to the bathroom together. We barely admitted to using the bathroom. Morelli looked around the table and gave a small, defeated sigh. He reached into his shirt pocket, extracted the key to the cuffs, and released me. I popped out of my seat and ran upstairs to the bathroom. I locked the door, opened the window, and climbed out onto the roof over the back stoop. I'd used this escape route since junior high. I was good at it. I dangled myself off the roof, and I dropped to the ground. Morelli grabbed me, spun me around, and trapped me against the back of the house. He leaned into me and grinned.
I knew you'd go out the window.
In a perverse way, I liked that Morelli had me figured out. It was reassuring to know he paid attention. Very clever of you.
Yep.
Now what?
We go back to the table, and when dinner is over, we go home. Together.
And what happens in the morning?
We sleep late, read the Sunday paper, and take Bob for a walk in the park.
And Monday?
I go to work, and you stay home and hide.
I did a major head slap.
Ugh,
I said. His eyes narrowed.
What?
To begin with, I'm afraid to hide in your house. I'm afraid to hide in my apartment or in my parents' house. I don't want to endanger anyone, and I don't want to make it easy for the bad guys to find me.
And if that isn't enough, I hate when you order me around. I'm in law enforcement, too. I'm key to this mess. We should be working together.
Are you crazy? What did you have in mind? I should use you for bait?
Maybe not bait. Morelli grabbed the front of my shirt, pulled me to him, and kissed me. It was a great kiss, but I didn't know what the heck it meant. It seemed to me a breaking up kiss would have had less tongue. So, I said, do you want to explain that?
There's no possible explanation. I am so messed up. You frustrate the shit out of me.
I knew the feeling. I was the mess-up queen. There was a contract on my head, and I was weirdly involved with two men. I didn't know which was more frightening.
I'm going to take the coward's way out and leave, Morelli said. That whole thing with the handcuffs got a little freaky. I should go back to work anyway. We have a 24-hour watch on Ward's brother's house, so stay far away. I swear, if I see you anywhere near there, I'm going to have you arrested.
I did another eye roll and returned to the house. I was doing so many eye rolls these days, I was getting head pains. Sunday morning, I took a good look at myself in the mirror in Ranger's bathroom. Not a pretty sight, I decided. The fat had to go. I showered and got dressed, borrowing a black t-shirt from Ranger. The t-shirt was nice and roomy and hid the fat roll. It had been easy to find the t-shirt. It was perfectly folded and stacked on a shelf, along with 20 other perfectly folded black t-shirts. It had been easy to find the hooded sweatshirt I'd previously borrowed. The hooded sweatshirt had been perfectly folded and stacked on a shelf, along with 6 other perfectly folded black hooded sweatshirts. Doubly impressive, because it's damn hard to perfectly fold a hooded sweatshirt. I counted 13 black cargo pants, 13 black jeans, 13 perfectly ironed long-sleeved black shirts that matched the cargo pants. Black cashmere blazer, black leather jacket, black jeans jacket, 3 black suits, 6 black silk shirts, 3 lightweight black cashmere sweaters. I started opening drawers. Black dress socks, black and dark gray sweat socks, assorted black athletic clothes. There was a small safe and a locked drawer. I was guessing the locked drawer held guns. None of this especially interested me. The ugly truth is, I'd finally lost the fight for dignity, and I was searching for Ranger's underwear. Not that I was going to do anything kinky with it. I just wanted to see what he wore. Hell, I thought I'd shown a lot of restraint to have gone this long without snooping. I'd now searched the entire dressing room, and unless Ranger kept his underwear in his safe, it appeared to me that he went commando. I did one of those stupid fanning motions with my hands that women used to do in the movies back in the 40s to signify heat. I had no idea why I did it. It did nothing to cool me off. I was thinking about Ranger in his black cargo pants, and my face felt sunburned. I had other body parts that were pretty warm, too. I had one drawer left. I slowly opened the drawer and peeked inside. A single pair of black silk boxers. Just one pair. What the heck did that mean? I was feeling a little perverted, so I carefully closed the drawer, went into the kitchen, opened the refrigerator door, and let the cold air wash over me. I looked down and couldn't see my toes past my belly. Mental groan. No more junky breakfast cereal, I told Rex. No more donuts, chips, pizza, ice cream, or beer. Rex was in his soup can, so it was hard to tell what he thought of the plan. I got the coffee going, fixed myself a small bowl of Ranger cereal, and added skim milk. I like this cereal, I told myself. This is delicious. And it would be even more delicious with some sugar and chocolate. I finished the cereal and poured out a mug of coffee. I took the coffee into the den, and I turned the television on. By noon, I was bored with television, and the apartment was starting to feel claustrophobic. I hadn't heard a word from Morelli, and I took that as a bad sign, both romantically and professionally. I dialed his cell and held my breath while it rang.
What? Morelli said.
It's Stephanie. I'm just checking in.
Silence.
Since I haven't heard from you, I'm assuming you don't have Ward.
We've been watching the brother's house, but so far Anton's a no-show.
You're watching the wrong house. You need to get him through the girlfriend.
I don't have any leverage with the girlfriend.
I do. The girlfriend's mother used her house as collateral on the bond. I can threaten the mother with foreclosure.
More silence.
You could have told me this yesterday,
he finally said.
I was sulking.
Good thing you're cute when you sulk. What's the plan?
I'll visit the mother and apply some pressure. I'll pass whatever information I get on to you, and you can do the takedown.
Chapter 10 Anton Ward's girlfriend, Laureline Taylor, lived at home with her mother on Hancock Street. I wanted to question the Taylors, and I thought it was best to do it alone. Less threatening that way, and I didn't think I'd need help. This was basically a fishing trip in a neighborhood that was hard times, but not in the red zone on the danger meter. Houses were small, in varying degrees of disrepair, and largely multiple family. The population was ethnically mixed. The economy was a hair above desperate. Mostly, the inhabitants were working poor. I drove past Francine Taylor's house, didn't see any activity, and decided it was safe to approach. I parked the Lincoln a couple houses away, locked up, and walked back. The Taylor house was better than most in the neighborhood. The exterior was a faded lime green, halfway between bare wood and fresh paint. Shades looked inexpensive, but had been neatly raised to the same level on all windows. The small porch was covered with green indoor-outdoor carpet. Porch furnishings consisted of a rusted metal folding chair and a large glass ashtray filled with butts. I hesitated a moment, listening before knocking. I didn't hear any yelling behind the closed door. No gunshots, no big dogs snarling. Just the muffled hum of a television. So far, so good. I rapped once and waited. I rapped a second time. A very pregnant kid opened the door. She was a couple inches shorter than me, dressed in pink sweats not designed for maternity. Her face was round and smooth with baby fat. Her hair had been straightened and bleached honey blonde. Her skin was dark, but her eyes had an Asian tilt. Much too pretty for Anton Ward, and much too young to be pregnant.
Yeah?
She said. Laureline Taylor?
You're either a cop or social services,
she said,
and we don't want none.
She tried to close the door, but my foot was in the way. I represent Anton's bond agent. Is Anton here?
If Anton was here, you'd be dead.
Laureline sounded like she thought that would be a good thing, giving me pause to rethink my opinion of her. Anton needs to reschedule his court date, I said.
Yeah, like that's gonna happen.
Your mother used this house as collateral. If Anton doesn't show up for court, your mother will lose her house.
Anton will take care of us.
Mrs. Taylor came to the door, and I introduced myself.
I have nothing to say to you, Francine Taylor said. You're talking about the father of my unborn grandchild. You need to take this up with him.
You signed the bond document, I said. You used your house as collateral. If Anton doesn't show up for court, you'll lose this house.
He won't let that happen, Francine said. He has connections.
He has no connections, I said. If he stays in the area, we'll catch him, and he'll go to jail. His only other option is to run. And if he runs, he's not going to take a pregnant woman with him. And he's not going to care if you keep this house. You'll be on the street with nothing.
It was the truth, and I could see that Francine knew it. She wasn't as dumb as her kid.
I knew I shouldn't have put the house up for him, Francine said. It was just I wanted him to turn out good for Laureline.
This dump isn't worth nothing anyway,
Laureline said.
I work hard to make my payments on this house, Francine said. It's a roof over your head, and it's going to be the only roof over your baby's head, and I'm not losing it for no worthless Anton Ward.
It don't matter what anyone thinks, Laureline said. I'm not giving up Anton, and there's nothing you can do about it. He's going to marry me, and he's going to take me out of this hole. We got plans.
I gave Francine my card and asked her to call if she had information on Ward. I wished Laureline luck with the baby, and she told me to kiss her ass. I try not to be judgmental, but it was a little frightening that Laureline Taylor and Anton Ward were reproducing. I returned to the Lincoln and sat there a while watching the Taylor house. I'd had a bowl of rabbit food for breakfast and nothing for lunch. I was starving, and there was no food in the Lincoln. No Krispy Kremes, no Big Mac, no supersized fries.
I had two new skips, but I wasn't motivated to find them. And Harold Pancheck was out there. But truth is, I didn't care much about him either. I cared about Anton Ward. I wanted to see Ward locked up. I would have preferred not to be the one doing the capture, but at the moment I felt relatively safe, so I decided to sit tight. I was still watching the Taylor house at 4 o'clock. I was bored out of my mind and hungry enough to eat the upholstery. I called Lula, told her I was on Hancock, and asked her to bring me something non-fattening to eat. 5 minutes later, the Firebird pulled to the curb behind me, and Lula got out.
"What's happening?" she asked, handing over a brown paper lunch bag. "Did I miss anything?"
"I'm hanging out to see if Laureline has a date tonight." I looked in the bag. It contained a bottle of water and a hard-boiled egg.
"You gotta stay away from the carbs," Lula said. "That's how I lost all my weight. I went on that protein diet. Then I sort of fell off the wagon and gained all the weight back. But it was still my favorite diet, except for the time I ate 2 pounds of bacon and threw up."
I ate the egg and drank the water. I thought about eating the bag, but I was worried it was carbohydrate.
"I guess I should stay with you in case something dangerous happens and you need someone to squish somebody," Lula said.
I looked over at her. "Nothing better to do?"
"Not a damn thing. I'm between men right now, and there's nothing on television worth watching."
She pulled a deck of cards out of her purse.
"I figured we could play rummy."
At 6 o'clock, Lula said she had to have a bathroom break. She took off in the Firebird, and she returned a half hour later with powdered sugar on her shirt. "That's really rotten," I said. "You got a lot of nerve sneaking out to get food and not bringing any back for me."
"You're on a diet."
"It's not the starvation diet."
"Well, I was going to stop home to use the bathroom, and then I thought, why not use the bathroom at Dunkin' Donuts? And then I couldn't very well use their bathroom without buying some donuts. That'd be rude, right?"
I gave her an Italian hand signal that didn't mean left turn.
"Boy, you get cranky when you don't get a donut," Lula said.
A little over an hour later, streetlights were on, and Hancock Street was settled in for the night. Lula and I couldn't play cards in the dark, so we were passing the time with 20 questions.
"I'm thinking of something that's animal," Lula said, "and my ass is asleep. What makes you so sure Laureline's going to have a date tonight?"
"She's got news for Anton, and I'm betting she's going to use it to make him come see her." Just then, the Taylor's front door opened, and Laureline stepped out.
"You're pretty smart," Lula said. "You're always thinking. You know all about manipulative female shit."
Laureline looked right and left, and Lula and I froze. We were just a couple houses down, easily in sight. Fortunately, we weren't under a streetlight, and Laureline didn't appear to have picked us out. She was wearing the same pink sweatsuit. She wasn't carrying a purse. She set off down the street, walking away from us.
"She's going to meet him," Lula said, "and she don't want her mama to know."
Laureline turned the corner, and I started the car engine. I left my headlights off, and I carefully followed after Laureline. She walked 2 blocks and got into the back seat of a parked car. The car was in shadow, hard to tell the make, impossible to see the occupants at this distance. It looked to be a compact, possibly dark green. I stopped several houses back and idled at the curb. There were no cars parked between Laureline and me.
"We're sort of exposed sitting here like this," Lula said. "She could turn around and see us."
I agreed, but I didn't want to drive past Laureline and risk having her recognize me. Better to take our chances being parked in the dark. After a short time, the car in front of us started to rock.
"Look at this," Lula said. "She's 7 months pregnant, and they're doing the nasty in the back seat of a friggin' compact. They didn't even bother to go out in the neighborhood."
"They must have been in a hurry," I said.
"Well, excuse me, but I think that's tacky. He could at least have had the courtesy to steal something with a bigger back seat. This here's a pregnant woman he's slipping it to. I mean, how much effort does it take to find a Cadillac? All those old people over in Hamilton Township got caddies. Those cars are just sitting around waiting to get stolen."
"He's doing more than slipping," I said. "I've never seen a car rock like that."
"He's gonna ruin the shocks if he keeps this up."
Some loud groaning sounds carried back to us, and Lula and I rolled our windows down so we could hear better.
"Either he's real good or else she's going into labor," Lula said.
She leaned forward and squinted.
Am I looking at a moon? What the hell is he doing? How did he get his ass plastered against the rear window like that?
The sight was both horrifying and mesmerizing.
Maybe we should go get him before he finishes up, Lula said. It'll be easier to get the cuffs on him when he's got a boner and can't move real fast.
Lula was probably right, and I couldn't see myself slapping cuffs on Anton Ward while his flag was flying. Last month, Morelli and I rented a porno flick, and there was some boinking in it. And okay, so it was fun in a car crash kind of way, but that was film, and this is Anton Ward in the flesh, rocking the car with pregnant Laura Lean Taylor. Yikes, I was as close as I wanted to get.
Uh-oh, Lula said. The car stopped rocking.
We stuck our heads out and listened. Quiet.
He don't impress me as being the type to stick around, Lula said.
We jumped out of the Lincoln and scurried up to Ward's car. I had cuffs shoved into the waistband of my jeans, and I was holding Ranger's maglite in one hand and pepper spray in the other. Lula was fumbling in her purse, looking for her gun as she ran. I took a deep breath, prayed to God that Anton and Laura Lean had their clothes on, and flashed the maglite into the car interior.
What the fuck? Anton Ward said, bare ass gleaming under the maglite.
Oops, I said. Sorry, I thought you were done.
Guess they must have been changing positions, Lula said, looking into the car. You fat cow, Ward yelled at Laura Lean. You set me up!
And he punched her in the face. I dropped the maglite in the spray and reached into the car to secure Ward, but he was a man in motion, and I only succeeded in grabbing his pants. He wriggled out of the pants, hurled himself out of the opposite side of the car, and took off running. I ran after him down the street to the corner. He turned the corner and kept going. He was younger and probably in better shape than me, but he was running buck naked, with the exception of socks. I figured eventually the socks were going to slow him down, not to mention the outdoor plumbing swinging in the breeze. I could hear Lula pounding the pavement half a block back. Nice to know someone was slower than me. Ward cut through a narrow alley between houses, jumped a fence, and fell when he caught his foot on the top of the fence. He scrambled to his feet, but he'd lost ground to me. I went over the fence and tackled him. He wasn't a real big guy, but he was a nasty fighter. We rolled around on the ground, swearing and clawing. Turns out it's not that easy to grab hold of a naked guy. Not that I was feeling fussy about where to grab, mostly I just couldn't get a grip on anything. He caught me with a knee to the stomach, and I rolled off him in a rush of pain.
Stand clear, Lula yelled. I've got him.
And Lula fell on top of Anton Ward, doing a perfect repeat of Roger Banker. There was a woof of air that got squished out of Anton Ward's body when Lula made contact, and then Ward didn't move. He was on his back, spread-eagled, eyes open and fixed. Lula towed him.
You aren't dead, are you?
Ward blinked.
He isn't dead, Lula said. Too bad, huh?
I cuffed him, and Lula and I hauled him to his feet.
Guess we don't have to search him for weapons, Lula said. That's a big advantage to chasing down a naked guy.
Come on, I said to Ward. We're going back to the car.
I'm not going nowhere, he said.
Don't mess with me, I told him. I've only had an egg to eat today, and I'm feeling really vicious.
Not only that, but I wouldn't mind having a reason to sit on you again, Lula said. I'm working at perfecting my technique. That was my new special move. I'm even going to give it a name. You know how The Rock has all them wrestling moves like the People's Elbow and the Rock Bottom? I'm going to call mine the Lula Booty Bomb.
Ward did some mumbling and started walking.
You're as good as dead, he said to me. We're so scared we're shaking, Lula said. Look at me. I'm shaking. We're getting threatened by some ugly-ass naked guy. You think we're scared of you? You can't even keep your baggy-ass clothes on. You mess with me and you mess with the nation, Ward said. Only reason Bounty Hunter bitch hasn't tasted the brothers so far is she's being saved for Junk Man.
Ward smiled at me.
You're gonna like Junk Man. They tell me he's got a way with bitches.
We turned the corner, and I could see the Lincoln at the curb, but no Ward car.
Fuck, Ward said. That cow took off with my car.
No big disaster, except his clothes were in the car. Lula and I both looked at Ward.
He isn't going to my Firebird like this, Lula said. I'm not sitting his nasty bare ass on my Firebird seat.
I didn't want his bare ass on my upholstery either. I wasn't in love with the Lincoln, but it was all I had right now.
I'll call Morelli, I said. They can come pick him up.
You have Ward in cuffs, Morelli said after a deadly pause.
Yeah, and I thought you could come get him.
You were supposed to call me for the takedown.
I forgot. It happened kind of fast. You know, took me by surprise.
10 minutes later, two squad cars pulled up. Robin Russell got out of the first car and walked over to me.
Oh, man, she said. He's naked. I'm not getting paid enough for this job.
Wasn't our fault he's naked, Lula said. We caught him in the act. He was in the back seat of a Hyundai, humping like a big dog.
Carl Costanza followed Russell. He checked Ward out and grinned at me.
You want to tell me the details?
No, I said. You're going to have to make them up as you go.
Joe's going to love this, Costanza said.
Where is he?
He's waiting at the station. He was afraid he'd be up for homicide if he didn't calm down before he saw you.
Robin slung a friendly arm around Costanza's shoulders.
I have a real big favor to ask.
No way.
Robin Russell narrowed her eyes.
You don't even know what I was going to say.
You were going to try to sweet-talk me into putting this guy's bare ass in my squad car.
I was not, Russell said. Well, all right, I was.
She locked eyes with Costanza.
What would it take?
Costanza smiled at her.
You're a disgrace to the uniform, Russell said to Costanza.
I try.
Russell wrapped her hand around Ward's arm and tugged him forward.
I'm going to sit you on my Trenton Times, she said to Ward, and I don't want to see your butt move off that newspaper.
That was fun, Lula said. That was worth waiting for.
It was satisfying to have captured Ward, but I don't know if I'd classify the experience as fun. I dropped Lula at her Firebird, thanked her for her help, and then I went on to the police station. I would have preferred to crawl back to Ranger's apartment and let my mind go numb in front of his big-screen TV, but I had to make sure I was credited for the capture, and I had to pick up my body receipt. The police station isn't in the high-rent part of town, and the public lot is across the street and unguarded. It was too late, too dark, and I was too worried to take a chance on the public lot, so I parked illegally in the lot reserved for cop cars. I had myself buzzed in through the back door, and I went directly to the desk. Ward was there, chained to a wooden bench, still naked. Someone had draped a towel over his lap.
Hey, bitch, Ward said to me. Want to take a peek under the towel? Take one last look at the big boy?
Then he made slurpy, kissy sounds at me. I'd already seen more of the big boy than I wanted, and it wasn't that big or that fascinating, and the kissy sounds were really getting on my nerves. I kept my head down at the desk, waiting for my paperwork. I didn't want to see Morelli. I didn't know if he was in the building. If I got out before he found me, that would be cool. I figured time and space were my friends at this point. There was a new cop behind the desk, going slow, making sure he was getting it right. I had a hard time not ripping the body receipt out of his hands.
In a hurry? He asked.
Things to do. I took the receipt from him, turned on my heel, and marched out of the building. I avoided eye contact with Ward, just in case the towel had slipped, or, even worse, was moving. The back door closed behind me, and I shrieked when Morelli grabbed me and pulled me to one side.
Jeez, I said, hand over my heart. You scared the crap out of me. Don't sneak up on me like that.
Although, truth is, I'm not sure I shrieked because I didn't know who it was, or because I did know who it was.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I think I'm okay. I'm just having some heart palpitations. I have them a lot these days.
Now that you've had a chance to see Ward up close, are you sure he's the Red Devil?
Yes.
And he was in the car when Gazzara got shot?
Yes. A patrol car pulled up to the back door for delivery. Morelli and I stood aside while two cops hauled Laureline out of the back seat.
What did she do? I asked.
Ran a red light in a stolen car, driving without a license.
Laureline's eyes were red from crying. She's had a bad night, I said to Morelli, and she's pregnant. Maybe you can talk to her. She looks like she could use a friend. I called Francine and told her Ward had been captured. Then I told her Laureline was at the cop shop.
Now what? Morelli said.
I'm going home. Stick a fork in me. I'm done.
And home is where?
It's a secret.
I could find you if I put some energy to it, he said.
I'd tell you if I thought I could trust you.
Morelli sent me a tight smile. He couldn't be trusted. We both knew it. He'd drag me out of my hiding place against my wishes if he thought it was the right thing to do.
Do you need an escort out of here? Are you in public parking?
No, I'm illegally parked in the chief spot.
Morelli looked over at the reserve space.
The Lincoln? What happened to the truck?
Too high profile.
My cell phone rang at 6:45 Monday morning.
Junkman tagged the second gang member on his list, Morelli said. You don't want to know the details, but it took us less time to locate all the body parts this time since we knew where to look.
Not good information on an empty stomach. I rolled out of bed and went to the kitchen to say good morning to Rex. I made coffee and drank it with my meager bowl of healthy, tasteless cereal. After two cups of coffee, I still wasn't motivated to start my day, so I went back to bed. The phone rang again at 8 o'clock. It was Connie.
You remembered about Carol Cantell, right?
Sure. What was I supposed to remember?
She's got court today.
Shit. I'd completely forgotten.
What's her court time? She's supposed to be there at 9, but her case probably won't be heard until after lunch.
Call her sister and have her go over to Carol's house. I'll pick Lula up at the office in a half hour. No time for a shower. I borrowed a hat and another shirt from Ranger and pulled on my one remaining pair of clean jeans. I was in the elevator when I realized I'd buttoned the top snap on the jeans. Hooray, the diet was working. Good thing, too, because I was hating every minute of it and would love an excuse to quit. I remoted the gate open and ran to the car. I was parking closer now that I was driving the Lincoln, not as afraid of discovery by Ranger's men. I was on the cell phone at the first red light, calling Cantell.
What? She yelled into the phone. What?
It's Stephanie Plum, I said in my most reassuring, soothing voice. How are things going?
I'm fat. That's how it's friggin' going. I have nothing to wear. I look like a blimp.
You remembered your court date?
I'm not going. I can't get into any of my clothes and everyone's gonna laugh at me. I ate a truck full of chips for crying out loud.
Lula and I are coming over to help. Just hang in there.
Hurry up. I'm losing it. I need salt. I need grease. I need something crunchy in my mouth. I'm running a fever here.
Cindy was sitting on Carol's front porch when we drove up.
She won't let me in, Cindy said. I know she's in there. I can hear her pacing.
I rapped on the front door.
Carol, open the door. It's Stephanie.
Have you got food?
I crinkled a bag of cheese doodles so she could hear it through the door.
Lula and I stopped on the way over and bought doodles to get you through the court session.
Carol cracked the door.
Let me see.
I shoved the cheese doodles at her. She grabbed the bag from me, ripped it open, and shoved a handful of doodles into her mouth.
Oh, yeah,
she said, sounding a lot like LaWanda doing phone sex.
I feel better already.
I thought you were over the doodle craving, Lula said.
I'm not good with stress, Carol said. It's a glandular thing.
It's a mental thing, Lula said. You're a nut.
We all followed Carol upstairs to her bedroom.
I did my hair and I put on my makeup, and then I went to get dressed and I just sort of had a brain fart, Carol said.
We stood at the doorway and surveyed the disaster area. It looked like her closet exploded, and then her room was ransacked by monkeys.
Guess you couldn't decide what to wear, Lula said, stepping over the clothes carnage that littered the floor.
Nothing fits, Carol wailed.
Would have been good if you discovered that yesterday, Lula said. You ever think of preparing ahead?
I was picking through the crumpled piles of clothes on the floor, looking for slacks with elastic waistbands, bulky tops, scarves that matched.
Help me out here, I said. Let's start with the slacks. Black would be good. Everything goes with black.
Yeah, and it don't show the cellulite lumps, Lula said. Black is real slimmin'.
10 minutes later, we had Carol squashed into black slacks.
The button was open at the waist, but you couldn't see it under the hip-length dark blue cotton shirt.
Good thing you got this nice big roomy shirt, Lula said to Carol.
Carol looked down at it.
It's a nightgown.
Do you have any roomy shirts that aren't nightgowns? I asked her.
They all have doodle stains on them, she said. It's hard to get those orange smudges out of stuff.
You know what I think, I said. I think this outfit looks good. No one will know you're wearing a nightgown. It looks just like a shirt, and the color is good for you.
Yeah, Lula and Cindy said. The color is good.
Okay, I said. We're ready to go.
I've got her purse and jacket.
I got a towel so she don't get doodle crumbs on herself on the way to the courthouse, Lula said.
I can't do it, Carol sobbed.
Yes, you can, we all said. You can do it.
Hit me, Carol said. I need a hit.
I gave her a new bag of cheese doodles. She tore the bag open and scarfed a handful of doodles.
You gotta pace yourself, Lula said to Carol. You got a long day ahead of you, and you don't want to run out of doodles.
Carol clutched the bag to her chest, and we nudged her forward, down the stairs, out to the car. I got Carol Cantell settled in at the courthouse, and then I left. Lula and Cindy were with Cantell. Cindy had four unopened bags of doodles. Lula had cuffs and a stun gun. They promised to call me if a problem developed. I would have stayed with Cantell to see how things turned out, but I was feeling grungy. I needed a shower, and I needed to put distance between me and the cheese doodles. 10 more minutes with Cantell, and I would have wrestled her for the remaining bags. I drove past Ranger's building, but there was too much activity to chance a run for the elevator. So what are the alternative shower and lunch possibilities? Morelli's house was one alternative. I had a key to the house, and I still had some clothes there. Convenient, but not smart, I thought. Not a good time to return. Too many unresolved issues. And Junkman could be watching the house. Better to go to my parents' house. It was easier to sneak in through the back, and I could feel relatively confident that I wasn't seen. Chapter 11. It was close to noon when I cruised into the burg. Sally's bus was parked in front of my parents' house, and my father's car was missing from the driveway. Probably there was a big wedding discussion going on, and my father was hiding out at the Elks Lodge. On first pass, I didn't see any slayers with boomboxes or automatic weapons. Of course, if someone was skinny enough, he could be crouched behind Mrs. Siak's hydrangea bush. I thought, better safe than sorry, and I did my Saturday night routine, driving halfway around the block to park. I had the sweatshirt on again with the hood up. I locked the Lincoln, and once again I cut through the Criswickies' yard. I didn't want my mother to do another freakout, so I took the sweatshirt off before I opened the back door. Sally, Valerie with the baby, my mother, and Grandma Mazur were at the kitchen table. You're hiding from someone, aren't you? My mother said to me. That's why you keep sneaking in the back.
She's hiding from them gang members who want to kill her, Grandma said. Does anyone want that last piece of cake?
That's ridiculous, my mother said. We don't have gangs in Trenton.
Wake up and smell the coffee, Grandma said. We got Bloods and Craps and Latin Queens, and that's just to name a few.
I was in a rush this morning, and I didn't have time to take a shower, I said to my mother. Is it okay if I shower here?
Of course it's okay, my mother said. Did you really break up with Joseph again?
I moved out of his house. I'm not sure how broken up we are. My mother went still, radar humming.
If you're not living with Joseph, where are you living?
This got everyone's attention. I'm staying in a friend's apartment, I said.
What friend?
I can't say. It's a secret.
Oh, my God, my mother said. You're having an affair with a married man.
I'm not.
Isn't that something? Grandma said.
Sally snapped the band on his wrist.
What was that for? Grandma asked.
I thought a really bad word, Sally said.
Yeesh. I'm not going to discuss this, I told everyone. This is stupid. And I flounced off to take a shower. An hour later, I was showered and shampooed, and I was peering into my mother's refrigerator. I didn't have nearly so much blubber hanging over the waistband of my jeans today. Amazing how the fat disappears when you stop eating. The downside was that I felt mean as a snake.
"What are you looking for?" my mother wanted to know. "You've been standing there with the door open for 10 minutes.
"I'm looking for something that won't make me fat."
"You're not fat," my mother said. "You shouldn't worry."
"She's got to be careful of the plum side of the family," Grandma said. "This is when it starts. Remember how Violet was always so thin? Then she hit her 30s and ballooned up. Now she has to buy 2 seats when she gets on an airplane."
"I don't know what to eat," I said, arms flapping. "I've never had to worry about weight before. What the hell am I supposed to friggin' eat?"
"Depends what kind of diet you're doing," Grandma said. "Are you doing Weight Watchers, Atkins, South Beach, The Zone, the slime diet, the sex diet? I like the slime diet myself. That's where you're only allowed to eat things that got slime, like oysters and slugs and raw bull's balls. I was gonna try the sex diet, but I couldn't figure out some of the rules. Every time you get hungry, you're supposed to have sex. Only thing is, they didn't say what kind of sex you're supposed to have, like whether you should have it alone or with someone else. And what about that oral sex stuff? I never did a lot of that, personally. Your grandfather wasn't much for experimenting," Grandma said to me.
My mother went to the cupboard, poured herself a tumbler of whiskey, and chugged it.
"So, what kind of diet are you on?" Grandma asked me.
"I'm on the tasty cake diet," I said, helping myself to a butterscotch crimpet.
"Good for you," Grandma said. "That's a good choice."
"I'm going back to work," I told everyone, putting my hood up, ducking out the back door. Mrs. Krizwicki was at her kitchen window when I scuttled through her yard. She leveled a gun at me, sighting with one eye. I pushed the hood back and waved, and she lowered the gun and reached for the wall phone, calling my mother, no doubt. I got into the Lincoln and drove to the office.
"I heard from Lula at the courthouse," Connie said. "Cantel's doing okay."
"How about Ranger? Have you heard from Ranger?"
"Not a word."
Rats. He wasn't supposed to be back for at least another week, but I didn't want to take any chances on being caught in his bed, or even worse, in his shower. Connie's eyes fixed on my hat.
"That looks like Ranger's hat."
"He gave it to me." It was a perfectly good fib. If he gave me his truck, why not his hat? Connie looked like she bought it.
"I wish Ranger would get his butt back here," Connie said. "I'm not happy about you going after Rodriguez. What kind of a person would carry a thumb around with him?"
"A crazy person?"
"It's creepy. If you want, I can call Tank to go with you."
"No." Last time I went out with Tank, he broke his leg. Then his substitute got a concussion. I was hell on Ranger's merry men. Bad enough I was squatting in his apartment, I didn't want to compound the damage by wiping out his workforce. And if I was being totally honest, I'd have to admit that time spent with Tank was uncomfortable. Tank was Ranger's right-hand man. He was the guy who watched Ranger's back. He was entirely trustworthy, but he rarely spoke, and he never shared his thoughts. I'd reached a sort of telepathic state with Ranger. I hadn't a clue what was in Tank's mind. Maybe nothing at all. "I'm a lot more worried about Junkman than I am about Rodriguez," I said to Connie.
"Have you seen Junkman?"
"No."
"Do you know what he looks like?"
"No."
"Do you know why you're on his list?"
"Does there have to be a reason?"
"There's usually a reason," Connie said.
"I can identify Ward as the Red Devil, and I bounced Eugene Brown off my Buick."
"That could be it," Connie said. "Or it could be something else."
"Like what?" Connie shrugged.
"I don't know gangs, but I know something about the mob. Usually when someone's targeted for takeout, it's about power. Keeping it or getting it."
"How does that relate to me?"
"If it's an entire gang that's out to get you, you move far away. If it's only one member, you can eliminate the problem by eliminating the member."
"Are you suggesting I kill Junkman?"
"I'm suggesting you try to find out why Junkman has you on his list."
"I'd have to penetrate the Slayers."
"You'd have to catch one and make him talk to you," Connie said.
Catch a Slayer. It sounded like a kid's game.
"You could hide out until Ranger gets back," Connie said.
What she meant was, I could hide out until Ranger gets back and eliminates Junkman for me. Ranger was good at solving problems like that, and it was tempting to let him solve mine, but that's not the sort of thing you do to someone you like. That's not even the sort of thing you do to someone you hate, not when the problem is solved by murder. I'd already been there, and it didn't feel great. I was pretty sure Ranger had once killed a man to protect me. The man had been insane and determined to end my life. His death had been ruled a suicide, but in my heart, I knew Ranger had stepped in and done the job. And I knew there'd been an unspoken agreement between Ranger and Morelli. Don't ask, don't tell. Morelli was a cop sworn to uphold the law. Ranger had his own set of laws. There were things that fell in the gray zone between Morelli and Ranger. Things Ranger was willing to do if he felt it necessary. Things Morelli could never justify. I'll think about it, I told Connie. Let me know if you hear from Ranger. I'd parked in the small lot behind the bonds office. I left through the back door, got into the Lincoln, and I called Morelli. What's happening with Anton? I asked. Did he make bail?
It's set high. I don't think anybody's going to step forward for him.
Have you talked to him? Did he tell you anything interesting, like about Junkman?
He's not talking, Morelli said.
Can't you make him?
I could, but I misplaced my rubber hose.
You said Junkman was a hired gun, right? That he was from L.A.?
We're not sure if that information is right anymore. The source hasn't turned out as reliable as we'd hoped. We know there's a guy out there who uses the tag Junkman, and we know he's working his way through a list. That's really all we're sure of.
And I'm on the list.
That's what we're told.
And that's what Anton confirmed. It would be helpful to know why I'm on the list.
Whatever the reason, it would help your cause if you'd quit your job and look like a non-threatening housewife, or maybe go away for a couple months. These guys have a short attention span.
Would you miss me if I went away? There was a long silence. Well, I asked.
I'm thinking.
I called Lula next.
Carol's up in about 10 minutes, Lula said. How are we supposed to get home?
I'm on my way. Parking's a pain. Call me when you're on the sidewalk in front of the building, and I'll swing by and pick you up. I reached the courthouse and drove around the block. My phone rang on the second pass.
We're out, Lula yelled. We got Carol with us, too, and we all need a bar.
How did she do?
Probation and counseling. It was her first offense, and she'd already paid for all the Fritos she ate. We had a lady judge who weighed about 200 pounds and was real sympathetic.
I turned the corner and saw them at the curb. Lula and Cindy were smiling. Carol looked shell-shocked. She was ghostly white, clutching a bag of cheese doodles to her chest, and she was visibly shaking. They all piled into the back seat, with Carol sitting between Cindy and Lula.
Carol doesn't know the court session is over, Lula said, grinning. Carol's in a state. We gotta get Carol a big-ass margarita.
I drove over to the Berg, and I parked in front of Marsilio's. It was a nice, safe place to get a drink. If anybody messed with you at Marsilio's, Bobby V would kick their butt. Or, even worse, he'd make sure they didn't get a table. We guided Carol into Marsilio's, sat her at a table, and used the napkin to brush some of the doodle dust off her.
Am I going to jail? Carol asked.
No, Cindy said. You're not going to jail.
I was afraid I was going to jail. Who would take care of my kids?
I take care of your kids, Cindy said. But you don't have to worry about it because you're not going to jail.
Alan, the owner, rushed over with a margarita for Carol.
Am I going to jail?
She asked. 3 margaritas later, we poured Carol into the Lincoln and I dumped her at Cindy's house.
Boy, Lula said, she was really hammered.
With any luck, she'd throw up a bag or two of doodles. Don't get me wrong, I love doodles, but they aren't exactly diet food when you snarf them by the truckload. It was late afternoon, so I took Lula to the office. I parked in the rear lot, and we went in through the back door. Connie was on her feet when she saw us.
I've got a bunch of files, she said. Everyone take a couple and put them away. I don't want another file mess.
I took my stack of files and arranged them alphabetically. Joe tells me no one bonded out Anton Ward this time.
He's being held on a big bucks bond, and no one has the collateral to cover it. His brother called, but Vinny wouldn't take the bond. The only way Ward's going to get out is with a signature bond, and no one's going to write a signature on Anton Ward.
What's the charge?
Armed robbery and accessory.
Ain't no justice in this world, Lula said. That scrawny piece of garbage will plea bargain and get off with a couple years.
Connie filed the last of her folders.
I don't think he'll plea bargain. I don't think he'll talk at all. If he gives up any slayers, he's as good as dead.
There was a burst of rapid-fire gunshots from the back of the building, and we all instinctively went to the floor. The shooting stopped, but we stayed down.
Tell me I'm hallucinating, Lula said. I don't want to believe this.
After a couple minutes, we got to our feet and tiptoed to the back door. We put our ears to the door and listened. Perfectly quiet. Connie cracked the door and peeked out.
Okay, she said. It makes sense now.
Lula and I peeked out, too. The Lincoln was totally spray-painted with gang graffiti and riddled with bullet holes. The tires were shot out, and the windows were shattered.
Huh, Lula said. Guess you're gonna need alternative transportation.
What I needed was a new life. I felt myself gnawing on my lip again and immediately forced myself to stop.
You're kinda white, Connie said to me. Are you okay?
They found me. I was driving a new car, and I parked in the back, and they figured it out.
Probably watching the office, Lula said.
I'm trying real hard not to freak, I told them.
Play the role, Lula said. That's what we do. We pick a role, and we play it. What role you want to play?
I want to be smart, and I want to be brave.
Go for it, Lula said.
Connie closed and locked the door. She went to the ammo storage area, rummaged through boxes, and came up with a Kevlar vest.
Try this on for size, she said to me.
I slipped it on, flattened the Velcro closures, and covered the vest with a hooded sweatshirt. Lula and Connie stood back and looked at me. I was wearing Ranger's black hat, black t-shirt, black sweatshirt.
It's the damnedest thing, Lula said. Now you just don't smell like Ranger. You're even starting to look like him.
Yeah, Connie said. How come you still smell like Ranger?
It's this new shower gel I bought. It smells like Ranger. Can I fib or what?
I'm gonna go buy a gallon, Lula said. What's it called?
Bulgari. I was back to using Ranger's truck. I was parked two blocks from his building, waiting for the sun to set and the building to clear out. Another couple minutes, and I thought it would be safe for me to make a move. I'd been waiting for over 2 hours. That was okay. It had given me time to think. Connie was right. I needed to find out why I was on the list. Eventually, street crimes or the criminal intelligence unit would get the information, but I was having a hard time finding the patience for eventually. I had a stupid, crazy idea while I was at the bond's office. It was so stupid and crazy, I couldn't bring myself to say it out loud. Trouble was, the idea wouldn't go away, and I was beginning to think it wasn't so stupid and crazy. What I needed was a snitch. I needed to find a slayer who could be bribed into talking. I didn't have a lot of money to use as a bribe, so I figured I'd have to resort to violence. And then I needed to find this slayer outside of Slayerland. No way was I getting caught within slayer boundaries. So how am I going to catch a lone slayer out of his hood? Turns out, there's one sitting in jail. Anton Ward. All I have to do is bond him out, and he's mine. Okay, so I don't have all the details worked out, but it has potential, right? The sun was down and the streets were empty. Time to take a look at the building, I decided. I locked the truck, I pulled the hood over Ranger's ball cap, and I walked the two blocks to the gate. Floors 5 and 6 were lit, and there was a single window showing light on the fourth floor. Only the night guard was left in the lobby. Now or never, I thought. I remoted myself through the gate, crossed the garage, and took the elevator without a hitch. I let myself into the apartment and relaxed. The apartment was nice and empty, just as I'd left it. I dropped the keys to the truck in the dish on the sideboard. I shrugged out of the sweatshirt and vest and went to the kitchen. Rex was running on his wheel. I tapped on the side of the cage and said hello. Rex paused for a moment, whiskers twitching. He blinked once and went back to running. I opened the refrigerator and looked inside. Then I looked down at my waistline. still some fat oozing over the top of my jeans, but there was less fat than yesterday. I was moving in the right direction. I closed the refrigerator door and hustled out of the kitchen before the beer got to me. I watched television for a while, and then I took a shower. I told myself I was taking a shower to relax, but the truth was, I wanted to smell the soap. Sometimes I was able to forget I was living in Ranger space. Tonight wasn't one of those times. Tonight, I was very aware that I was using his towels and sleeping in his bed. It was a kind of Russian roulette, I thought. Each night I walked into the apartment and spun the barrel. One of these nights Ranger would be here waiting for me, and I was going to take it between the eyes. I toweled off and went to bed in panties and t-shirt. The sheets were cool, and the room was dark. The panties and t-shirt felt skimpy in Ranger's bed. I would be much more comfortable if I was fully dressed. Socks, jeans, two or three shirts buttoned to the neck tucked into the jeans, maybe a jacket and hat. It was the shower, I decided. The hot water and the delicious soap. And the towel. It had me all overheated. I could fix that, but I'd go blind. At least that was the threat when I was growing up in the Berg. You abuse yourself, and you'll go blind. It hadn't totally stopped me, but it had me worried. I really didn't want to go blind. Besides, what if I was in the middle of something, and Ranger walked in? Actually, that sounded pretty good. No, it didn't sound good. What was I thinking? I was sort of attached to Joe. Maybe. So where the heck was he when I needed him? He was at home. Probably. I could go over there, I thought. I could walk in and tell him I'd just taken a shower with this great soap that always makes me feel sexy, and then I'd explain to him how I got carried away with the towel. Good grief. I switched the light on. I needed something to read, but there were no books, no magazines, no catalogs. I wrapped myself in Ranger's robe, curled up on the couch, and turned the television on. I woke up to the Today Show. I was still in Ranger's robe. I was on the couch, and I was feeling cranky. It didn't help that Al Roker was on the television screen talking to some woman from Iowa, and Al was looking happy as could be. Al always looked happy. What's with that? I said goodbye to Al and beamed the television off. I dragged myself into the bathroom, but decided to forego the shower. I brushed my teeth and got dressed in the clothes on the floor. I was desperate for coffee, but it was almost 8 o'clock, and I needed to get out of the building. I clapped Ranger's hat on my head, stuffed myself into the vest and sweatshirt, and took the elevator to the garage. The elevator doors opened just as a car approached the gate. I flattened myself against the side and returned to the 7th floor. I waited in the 7th floor foyer for 10 minutes, and I tried it again. This time the garage was empty. I left the garage and I walked to the truck. The sky was overcast, and a misting rain had started to fall. The buildings on either side of Comstock were red brick and cement. No trees, no shrubs, no lawns to soften the landscape. It felt nicely urban when the sun was shining. Today, it felt grim. I drove to the office and parked the truck in full view on the street. Connie was already at work. Lula hadn't yet arrived. I saw no sign of Vinny. I went straight to the coffee pot and poured out a cup for myself. I haven't seen a lot of Vinny lately, I said to Connie. What's the deal?
He's got hemorrhoids. He comes in for an hour to bitch and complain, and then he goes home to sit on his rubber donut.
Connie and I both smiled at this. Vinny deserved hemorrhoids. Vinny was a hemorrhoid. I sipped my coffee.
So you're the one writing bonds now?
I'm doing the low-money bonds. Vinny gets off his donut to do guys like Anton Ward.
I need a favor.
Uh-oh, Connie said. I got a bad feeling about this.
I want you to help me bond out Anton Ward. I need to talk to him.
No way, uh-uh, nope, no can do, forget it.
This was your idea. You were the one who said I had to find out why I was on Junkman's list.
And you think Ward is going to tell you out of gratitude?
No, I was planning on beating it out of him. Connie considered that.
Beating might work, she said. Who's going to slap him around?
Me and Lula. You could do it too if you want. So, let me get this straight, Connie said. We bond him out, then we escort him from the jail to the trunk of Lula's Firebird and take him somewhere for further discussion.
Yeah, and then when we're done, we can revoke his bond.
I like it, Connie said. Did you think of this all by yourself?
Yep. Think of what all by himself, Lula said, swinging through the front door. Man, it's crappy out there. It's gonna rain cats and dogs all day.
Stephanie's got a plan to bond out Anton Ward and beat some information out of him, Connie said.
Lula's mood changed to smiley face.
No shit. Are you messing with me? That's inspired. You aren't gonna leave me out, are you? I'm good at smacking people around, and I just love to smack Anton Ward around.
You're in, I said to Lula. We just have to figure some things out first, like, where are we going to take him for his beating?
It has to be someplace isolated so no one hears him screaming, Lula said.
And it has to be cheap, I said. I haven't got any money.
I have just the place, Connie said. Vinny has a house in Point Pleasant. It's right on the beach, and no one's going to be around now. The season's over.
That's a great plan, Lula said. The arcade will still be open, and in between beating on Anton Ward, I can play the claw machine.
Do you think we'll have to beat him a lot? I asked Connie. A bunch of her relatives were mob, and I figured she knew about these things.
I hope so, Lula said. I hope he don't talk for days. I love Point Pleasant, and I haven't beat on anyone in a while. I'm looking forward to this beating.
I've never actually beat anyone, I said.
Don't you worry about it, Lula said. You just stand back and leave it to me.
We have to do this right, Connie said. We don't want anyone to know we have Ward. We're going to have to make it look like he just disappeared.
I've already thought it through, I said. You can call Ward's brother back and tell him we'll bond Ward out if he agrees to wear a personal tracking unit. We just got one in from iSecureTrack, right?
We haven't used it yet, Connie said. Haven't even taken it out of the box.
If Ward agrees to the PTU, we say we have to have him released into our custody so we can install the unit. Then we tell everybody we have to install the transmitter here at the office. We tell them after the unit is in place, Anton is free to go. We cuff Anton on his release and bring him back to the office, but instead of strapping the transmitter on him, we dump him in Lula's trunk. All she has to do is back up to the rear door, and Anton's off to Point Pleasant. Then we pretend Anton escaped. We can say he used the lavatory at the office, and he went out through the window.
Brilliant, Lula said. You're a criminal genius.
I like it, Connie said. Let's do it.
We all did a high five.
It'll take me some time to set this up, Connie said. I'll arrange it for the end of the business day. Then it won't be suspicious if we close the office down and disappear. In the meantime, you two should take a drive to Point Pleasant and make sure it's okay to use the house.
She took a key from a mess of keys she kept in her top drawer.
This is a key to the house. He doesn't have a security system. It's just a little bungalow on the beach.
She wrote the address on a sticky note and gave it to me. Lula and I didn't do a lot of talking on the way to Point Pleasant. Hard to say why Lula fell into silence. Mine was brought on by a mixture of disbelief and terror. I couldn't believe we were going to do this. It was insane, and it was all my idea. I was driving Ranger's truck, and Lula was reading the map. We'd reached the ocean, and we were looking for Vinny's street. The rain was steady, and the little shore houses that seemed cute and colorful in July sunshine looked sad in the dismal gray gloom.
You turn left onto the next street, Lula said, and you go all the way to the end. It's the last house on the right. Connie says it's painted salmon and turquoise. I'm hoping she's wrong about the paint.
This is like a ghost town, I said. Not a single house has a light on.
Better for us, Lula said. But it feels spooky, don't it? It's like we're in some horror movie, Nightmare in Point Pleasant.
I got to the last house on the right, and darned if it wasn't painted salmon with turquoise trim. It was a small two-story bungalow that faced the ocean. No garage, but there was a driveway separating Vinny's house and an almost identical bungalow next to him. At this time of year, a car parked in the driveway would be reasonably well hidden. I pulled the truck into the driveway, and I cut the lights. Lula and I squinted through the rain to the bungalow's back door. Above the door was a hand-painted sign that said, Sea Breeze.
Bet Vinny had to think a long time to come up with that name, Lula said.
I put my hood up, and Lula and I sprinted through the rain and huddled together on the small back stoop while I fumbled with the key.